on 1116 SEN, The Right Time with Gavin Krasiska, Nick Hall and Mark Fine.
The Right Time is upon us once again. It is a program that has, for the best part of 3 years, dealt with the spectre of addiction over a range of behaviours, whether it is illicit drug taking, alcoholism, gambling, and beyond. And we quickly switch our focus from the travails of addiction to notions of recovery through rehabilitation. And we do so with two men that have done exactly that, been able to turn their lives around in startling ways. The first of those, Gavin Krasiska, is familiar to many because of his footballing exposure at the Collingwood Football Club, where he was a premiership player, played over 200 games, and then as an assistant coach on the way to becoming an AFL coach. But there was another side, a dark side, one that was addressed with the help and the love of his wife, and now he is in his fourth year of recovery and doing wonderful things with other people through Sober Living Housing, which is in Carnegie, and it is an in-house facility that allows people fighting addiction to have time away from the source of their problems and hopefully leave better prepared for a long recovery. The phone number there is 95781746. And Gavin, I've got to ask you, is that do any of the skills you learnt playing football and coaching come handy at Sober Living House?
Good question, Finey. It's look, I guess I can say from my recovery point of view, there's a lot of discipline and tenacity and I guess fight in terms of staying on the recovery road. It's a that certainly held me in good stead from my playing days. When it comes to being with other people, I guess maybe coaching a little bit. It's a lot like the coaching.
Having a team that you're responsible for.
I often throw in the coaching cliches. Love it. In fact, the boys always often say during group or something, they say, "Oh, is that a coaching thing, Gavin?" I'll say, "Yes, it is."
That's great.
Well, they relate to it too fine, most of the boys.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Anything that is relatable and demystifies the road to travel, more power to you.
For sure.
Mick Hall also, whilst in the throes of addiction, had a double life, but his double life was thieving and using. So I guess it was a busy life, but one that could only end two ways. That is short or reformed, rehabilitated and recovered. And not just I, because I know Mick, but so many people say, thank goodness it was the latter. And today he's doing, on a week-to-week basis, more and more to get the message out there of the possibility of recovery through known workable methods. And he's come from the School of Hard Knocks and he is now the principal. Mick Hall is the principal of the Dayhab facility that is so well known in this town. The phone number there is 1-800-DAYHAB or 1-800-329-422. It's located in Mount Waverley and something that... Is it?
Glen Waverley.
You know what? I need to have a lobotomy. I cannot remember if it's Mount or Glen Waverley. And there's nothing that can help me remember other than... You corrected me, but it's not a problem because it's
not a problem at all.
You call the number 1-800-DAYHAB, and I promise you they'll give you a street address, and you will get there. If, and this is the big if, you've got the will to change. How are you, Mick?
G'day, Finey. G'day, Gav.
How are you, mate?
Good evening to yous.
Good evening.
How are we?
We've had a confronting week in a bit, gentlemen. Oof. We don't want to jump to any conclusions. By the way, in the tennis, there are two set points for Gasquet as Kyrgios serves at 15-40. So he's on the back foot a bit here, Kyrgios, and he now has to try and serve his way out of this game to get to a tiebreaker. He trails 5-6, 15-40. I'll give you good news or bad news as it comes to hand. But there's been a confronting week. We don't want to jump to any conclusions regarding the tragic slaying of Phil Walsh, allegedly by his son, and what connection, substance, and what substance may have been involved in that tragic incident. We certainly had confronting photos on the front of the Herald Sun of Harley Bennell, the Gold Coast player, dating back a couple of years. And we've recently had Brent Guerra, who now works for 1116 SEN, talking about his gambling addiction and how it was tearing his life apart and the money lost. By the way, speaking of lost, Kyrgios loses the first set 7-5. So, as these things are in the public place and public psyche, what does that do to guys and girls in your facilities? What does it do to people that are rank and file, normal citizens fighting the battle? Does it make them more isolated? Does it make it easier to talk about? Because it is certainly on the front burner now.
Look, I'm not really too sure how to answer that question just yet. But I've got a question on top of that question that I'd like to know, I'd like to hear from you guys. Mm. What do you think about those photos being put all over the front page of the Herald Sun for a start? What's your take on that? Do you think that's a good thing, a bad thing? It doesn't matter. Like, what is it? How do you see it?
Look, from my background, I think it's completely irrelevant and not warranted. I think that the kid would have been under enormous pressure and would have been embarrassed and ashamed anyway once the news come out without it having to be plastered all over the papers. I think that's way too much. And I guess that that's just me. What do you think, Mick?
Yeah, I felt pretty strongly about it, Gav. Look, I thought it was absolutely disgraceful. Disgraceful because, okay, those photos are there, all right, and they've come to light and fair enough and whatever action needs to be taken needs to be taken. But that guy's chances, right, of actually getting some sort of recovery if he needs it, right, for a start, have been drastically impaired by that. I believe that.
Why do you say that?
Well, because he's best been publicly named and shamed, really. And, you know, this is not about a behavioural issue. This is an illness issue, right? So if somebody's there doing lines of speed, right, and, you know, and then there's, you know, accusations being made about, which I don't know whether, you know, none of us know the validity of that stuff. But there's been accusations made. This person, you know, has been splayed out in front of the public and publicly shamed, really, when, you know, if he has a problem, this guy needs help. And he needs help in privacy, right? He needs help. He needs to be not treated as though he's somebody special. As far as I'm concerned, he's another bare bum in the shower, just like any other addict. And
if he is an addict, the photo doesn't tell us about...
No, but I wouldn't name somebody an addict, though, Finey. You know, like, but I mean, the probability is there, for sure, right? But, and then when we see, and we can't cast any aspersions, I know, with Phil Walsh, right? But we saw the seriousness of what's happened there. If there is any link with any drug taking, for me, it would be no surprise, all right? And the seriousness of what these people are going through, right, that take drugs and that have a real problem with them, like, it is serious. This isn't just something so that the Herald Sun or some journo can have a big breaking story over. This is somebody's life. You know, this is somebody's life.
And the thing with...
This is their family, their kids. Mate, I'll tell you what, I'm angry about it.
The thing with Bennell is also that it goes completely against the AFL illicit drugs policy.
Yep.
Like, that's in place at the moment, with a whole range of different legalities involved in it to keep it limited to the people that know, which is the club doctor at Strike 2 and the club, the AFL medical officers. That's it. You know, this kid didn't even have a strike.
No.
Didn't have a strike.
And it's 2 years old.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So look, I agree with you. The shaming part of it's just really critical to the kid. And again, I go back to what are they doing for him? And I know it needs to be privately done, but to what extent are they...
Well, it's not going to be private anymore.
No, I understand that. But I need to be careful going here in terms of the people I know that are involved with some clubs and the AFL in terms of their who they're consulting.
Yep.
And I do know for a fact one of them is simply a, you were talking about one before, but what do you call it? It's a, basically someone who will medicate someone who has a drug addiction. So it's not about actually educating them and looking at the internal stuff and the and what's underneath it.
Yep.
It's about actually, well, I can stop you. And he came out recently and said he had a cure for addiction. It was basically medicating people in a different way.
Nonsense.
But it's simply because it was prescribed.
Yep.
It was okay. And they did stop using drugs.
Yep.
But they were using another drug to not use illicits.
That's right. One of the things that's kind of been thrown up there, especially with ice and all that sort of stuff as well, and it was being used with heroin, is naltrexone implants.
Mm.
Which, by the way, I know plenty of people that have dug those implants out so that they can use. And what effect they're going to have in terms of, say, ice or amphetamines, I don't know. And it's like you said, it's dealing with one side of the addiction. You know, like lots of, we all get caught up in, and I think that the media can get caught up in this as well, that
the drug
addiction
use.
Is about the drug use. The drug use is the symptom of the addiction. If that person puts that drug down and stops using it, they're left with all of the stuff psychologically and emotionally, number one, that they've created whilst using the drug, and number two, that was already there
into it,
before they even picked it up. Now, unless that stuff is treated, that's where the addiction lies. That person is a ticking time bomb.
Mm.
And what happens is that just removing the drug from them becomes a band-aid approach to something that needs surgery. You know?
Yeah, beautifully said, Mick. And I look at my situation as well through my footy career. If I was found out and if I had been able to stop, it would have been the same process. I know I wouldn't have gone or been advised to go to a treatment service of some kind to actually look at the issue. It would have been stopping. And then when I finished, it just would have been up in the floodgates anyway.
Can you imagine waking up one morning, Gavin, and there's Gavin Krasiska all over the front page of the Herald Sun?
I'm not leaving my house.
Right. With lines of speed done
that's
up.
That's just shocking. Yeah.
At the wrong time for the wrong person, could that be as serious as...
Yeah.
As a... impetus to self-harm or even suicide?
When you're talking about someone's mental state, you really don't know. And that's what we were discussing just out in the little green room before about the Phil Walsh or Cy Walsh's situation, which we don't know what's happening. But just reading between the lines in the papers about his lifestyle and him searching for whatever he was searching for and the possible mental health issues. You know, you stick a drug like ice on top of that, that's just a... remedy for disaster.
Hmm.
It's just a shocking thing.
That's exactly right. We know that drug use, right, any drug use, but in particular amphetamines and cannabis, right, has a real effect with people. If there is an underlying mental health issue, those two drugs, right, are usually the key to unlocking that mental illness. It may stay dormant if they don't use it. But quite often, it is a key to unlocking that and actually releasing it. You know, the paranoia and the schizophrenic type symptoms that a person has with mental illness, they will get those symptoms through that through using those particular drugs.
Mm.
You know, and if that if there's a real disorder under there, man, those floodgates open.
Unlocks the door.
Wow, it is. Scary. And the other prospect, of course, or the other element in the equation is the safety net in our mental health system, if there was one, has been, or the rug has been pulled out from many mental health patients. It's not anecdotal, it is factual that to get into the public health system to attend to mental health issues is a long and difficult process. And we know the facilities for people suffering mental health issues have been systematically closed down, and those people now have been integrated into the community in accommodation, special accommodation houses and housing. And
finally, not only is it a long and difficult process to get into the public services, but it's also a sad journey, even once a person's in those services. Because let me tell you, a lot of the care is pretty poor.
So to gravitate towards... the quick euphoric high of drug use is almost, you'd almost not understand it, but you could expect it.
Yep.
And of course, then you've explained that once that quick hit has been taken on, there are other issues. Pandora's box has been opened, so it's very dangerous.
Here's another scenario too, Finny. What quite often can happen too is that a person can use drugs or alcohol, and they can have these, you know, mental health type symptoms that happen, and they present to the mental health services, and the mental health services go, hang on a minute, you use drugs and you take alcohol, so you've got a drug problem and an alcohol problem, so we can't take you. So then the person's shunted, and then they go into the drug and alcohol system, and if it's not a good place that they're going to, if it isn't a quality service that they're going to, then that service says, well, look, you know, you've got really got mental health issues. It's not drug and alcohol issues. We can't help you. So that person just gets shunted between the services, you know, and it is a sad journey sometimes, you know, but there is help out there, and a lot of us do understand how these two disorders can coexist, and we know how to separate them and simultaneously treat both.
We need to take a break. Daniel in Moorabbin, please hang on. We're going to take your call after the break, and feel free to call in and be part of the discussion. 9429 1116, the very public discussion that has been had not only in sporting circles but in every facet of Australian life, with those confronting photos of Harley Bennell, the passing, the murder of Phil Walsh, has a lot of people talking, and a lot of what they're saying not hitting the mark. If you want to correct some of the fallacies that you've heard, give us a call, because these two gentlemen, Mick Hall and Gavin Krasiska, are trained, experienced, and can sort wheat from chaff. At the tennis, unfortunately, the Aussie Nick Kyrgios is in free fall at the moment. He, at one point, was 5-all in the first set. He lost that set 7-5 and now trails Love 3 in the third. And as we stay with the point, gets it to 30-all on his serve. So it's Gasquet of the broken but French variety, leading 1 set to Love, 3-love. And when we come back, more of The Right Time. Back to The Right Time. Earlier tonight, when introducing The Right Time at 7 o'clock, I mentioned something, and I want to get these two blokes' take on it. I said 3 years ago when we started this program, the two blokes I'm referring to, by the way, Gavin Krasiska and Mick Hall, when we started the program, there were some raised eyebrows. That's not sport. That's not entertainment. That's odd. I think 3 years later, if one was to even only contend ourselves with addiction and its place in the sporting landscape, you'd almost have an hour show there a week. We definitely don't do that. There's no distinctions made here. Addiction needs to be fought, and we address it and talk about it as it's a community-wide issue. But how it has become integrated into sports news and the sporting world is, well, I guess it's sort of, I guess in a way, it's confirmation of why we do the show. Because if it's so prevalent in sport, people, and that's what's really confronting a lot of our listeners over the last week, well, then it's prevalent everywhere. It's prevalent in ballet. It's prevalent in the meat industry. It's prevalent in the peanut shelling societies.
I agree.
Professional services. It's all over the place. That's why I sort of go straight to, like, can't we do more? I'm probably digressing here. I'll do it quickly. Can't we do more in terms of addressing and educating the drug users before they cross that line? Because we talk about addiction and recovery, and there is, for many, there's a line that we get to, and for me it was just straight away. Others can drink for 10 years and then all of a sudden cross that line into alcoholism.
Yep.
What are we doing for the kids, the 18 to 20, or the 18 to 30-year-olds who are thinking they're experimenting and socially using before they actually cross that line into the oblivion or the abyss?
Certainly not put their pictures on the front of newspapers.
No. Yeah, true.
That's right.
Now, you can't throw everybody under the bus because of the horror stories that sell papers or make for good headlines on the news. It's a really good point that there's an enormous number of Australians that are not addicts, but if they start to be treated like addicts, they will become... if you alienate them, then you're not helping them.
That's right. So it's got to be that education, doesn't it?
Let's go to Daniel in Moorabbin. Good evening, Daniel.
G'day, guys. How you going?
G'day, Daniel.
Love the show. It's certainly helped me out. And just understanding, especially from an educational point of view, it's fantastic. So really good. I just want to talk to you, Mick, and certainly get your point of view. I know that they pointed out that 12 Gold Coast Suns and also the picture of Harley Bernal, and they say they got a drug culture all of a sudden, and then people start to tar them with the brush of an addict.
Yep.
Now, that's obviously not completely right. But I want to know sort of what your thoughts are on corporate Australia's point of view on this. Like, I'm going to use Judy Moran for an example because she tried to write a book and they said she couldn't because it was proceeds of crime. But Channel 9, play underbelly shows and all these other shows showing these young guys throwing drugs around and, topless girls in the casino with endless amount of money, The ending, obviously, where they all die is not the part that everyone really cares about. They see these pictures and it's fantastic. What's your thoughts, what do you sort of see when you see these shows come on? Do you get more intake of people into your program?
The glamorisation of the underworld and of that life. It's a great question, Daniel.
It is, and it's it really is just that, isn't it? It's glorifying the underbelly and the sordid sort of world that often sort of revolves around drugs. I mean, all these a lot of this underbelly stuff too. Of course, it was all about drugs. It's drugs is involved everywhere. And when you talk about corporate, you see corporate Australia and all that sort of stuff. I mean, not everybody should be tarred with the one brush, but by the same token, this problem is wide, it's deep and it's far, and it's, addiction isn't just the person sort of, shivering under a street light, on the corner somewhere. It's right through everywhere, and there are cultures that do build, that become acceptable, certainly in a lot of professional kind of white-collar industries, I know that cocaine is very, very popular. And is seen as something that's very acceptable to do.
But I think a lot of those shows and I guess advertising and so forth, that it'll affect a certain amount of people, but the majority of people will watch that and just think it's glorified drug use and glorified gang situations and so forth. But you'll have, we advise our people in our sober living housing, we advise them not to watch Breaking Bad, yep, and anything drug related because it triggers them. It's as simple as that.
It can trigger, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And it's it all comes back down to what you want to feed your brain as well. I mean, I remember having a discussion with a girl I was seeing at the time. I was in recovery and one of these shows was on and I was watching it a fair bit, and she said to me, she goes, "Why would you want to relive your past by watching this stuff?"
Mm.
And I went, I don't actually have an argument for that. I turned it off.
Mm.
I didn't watch the rest of it. And she was right. I don't know. Like you said, Gavin, it can trigger people. But for me, I just don't like to, I don't like the glorification, and I try and sort of steer away from it.
I remember when AIDS first came to public attention, there were some really confronting TV ads. It was the ad with the Grim Reaper in the bowling alley.
Yep.
And I certainly changed my habits and practiced almost manic safe sex for quite a long time on the back of those ads. It was
it was powerful.
Fearful stuff. Ads that portray, we've got good ads on this radio station with John Fowler from Lepine Funerals and Les Twentyman.
Yep.
Are they, there's a section, we are going to be saturated with a lot of these anti-drug messages and anti-ICE messages. Are they good?
I think some of them are. Some of them are. The realistic ones, though, Finey. You know, when it's got the, you know the thing that just said, just say no.
Yeah, well, they spent millions
as
on
an
it.
Addict, I look at that and laugh and just think that's ridiculous, because if we could just say no.
We'd say no,
you know, like, so.
And so if it's educational and it's got a bit of background and some oomph about it, for sure.
But if it's just there to scare people, if it's just showing, like the car ads, like the drink driving ads, is pretty strong.
Look, again, you're going to scare a certain amount of people, but if you've got someone who's addicted to drugs and they see that, they just laugh at it or turn it off.
But not for the addict, for the
normal Joe.
Yeah, it may
raise an eyebrow, and again, if it's educational and it gives them some knowledge, well, then for sure.
Daniel, thank you for your call. It was certainly thought-provoking. Let's go to Julia in Greensboro. Good evening, Julia.
Hi.
Hey, Julia.
Hi, Julia. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, look, this is a pretty... It's a pretty tough subject.
Go ahead, Julia. Just take your time.
I guess for me, as a parent, a mother who has a child with an addiction, there's been many years of hard times, and you feel very isolated, and it's a bit like when everyone was talking about AIDS, people were too scared to go near someone with AIDS. Me and my partner feel like family and friends have distanced themselves and don't want to know us, or they pretend that if they don't know, you know, it's not there, it doesn't exist. But they don't realise the impact on us and our son when they do that.
Yeah.
And also, all these people, boys, girls, men, women, that are addicts, you know, they were once. They are someone's child, and they were once a sweet young child that, you know, just got mixed up in the wrong crowd or tried the wrong thing, and before they knew it, they were in too deep. And under all that, there is a kind, gentle person.
And
we tend to tarnish drug addicts. You know, a lot of people say some pretty horrible things.
And that's the one thing we try and do, I guess, on the right time, is get the point across that addiction doesn't discriminate. We aren't bad people. I wasn't a bad person. Mick may have been at certain times, but not necessarily to the heart and soul of his values a bad person. But due to our drug use and our alcoholism or whatever it may have been, the symptoms of addiction is bad behaviour. And you're exactly right, Julian. I really feel for you. I can hear it in your voice, and it's a sad part of addiction that it just gets missed, and it's really unfortunate.
And look, Julia, I'd just like to encourage you to get some support for yourself. So I'm going to just read out a phone number. This is for Families Anonymous. I'm not sure if you know about them or not, but they'd be a really good place for you to kind of touch base with. The number is 0435 758 095, and that's for Families Anonymous. Get in touch with them and get yourself some support. I understand where you're coming from. My daughter, my oldest daughter, is an addict, and fortunately just into recovery in the last 6 months. And I understand your feelings and all that sort of surrounding your circumstances. But the advice that I would give you is to get some support for yourself.
I think that's what I'm trying to do. But the thing that I'm the most frustrated with the system and the way, you know, the CAT team and the police, and there's been a lot of letdowns and things like that, where there's not a lot of support out there for these people that need help. And as a parent, we don't have a voice. We can't do anything to help them.
Yep, I hear you. And unfortunately, certainly in particular through the public system, it is very much like that. So mental health services, drug treatment services in the public sector, they can be very difficult to negotiate, to engage with and to actually get the help. And that's where, I mean, if you've got the availabilities, that's where the private system comes in, and you can normally get some pretty good help pretty quickly. But, of course, that can be expensive too. So, but there is some support that you can get for you. It is free. It's Families Anonymous, and it would really help you a lot.
Julia?
Yeah.
Now, this is... I don't have the professional background at all of these two gentlemen. And my observation is, and you can feel free to correct me, that you feel isolated and ostracised, not only from your friends, but maybe from the community, that it's people either turn a blind eye or know and don't want to have relationships with you that you may have once had, and that services and the authorities are also difficult to deal with, and that you've had disappointments there. And just so you know that there is a growing community, because of the widespread nature of addiction, there is a growing community of people that don't judge, that won't ostracise, that do care and can open doors. And you probably feel tonight maybe that the world doesn't want to know your son or you and your husband or your family because of so many knockbacks and so many disappointments. There is another circle that you can travel in that is far more accepting and hopefully far more successful in the battle that you're fighting. It's just know this, that many of the people that are turning their noses up at you or slamming doors on you are in the same position in one way or another. It's too widespread to be in contact with a world of people that don't care and don't know. Maybe they're hiding the truth, but there is a much better place for you and your family to be in. And I'm not talking geographically, but I'm talking mentally and spiritually. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
And it really does. It exists finding, and it grows. Yeah.
Yeah, finding that is the hard thing because it's not an easy thing to find. And
if your son had cystic fibrosis, or if your son had a rare form of leukemia, you would end up knowing many families who had
huge
sons.
Huge network.
You know, there'd be a huge network, and there'd be things that you'd do together, from practical things for his health to socialising and living with those illnesses. Well, this is what your son has. He's got an illness, and there is a way of socialising and making the practical battle with that illness very much more doable by doing it with people that are battling the same battle.
And Julia, take up that.
It exists.
Take up that offer of going to Families Anonymous. Give it a try. It's it will break open that support network and that world. It costs you nothing. If you didn't catch the number, you can certainly you can leave your number with the producer and we'll get back to
but,
you.
But you could Google Families Anonymous, can't you?
You can. Yep.
Still, may be hard to find. Okay. Find it. And I was going to say, if you can leave your number, Julia, I'd like to give you a call tomorrow just to. About inviting to our next family day, just around education and awareness and stuff. So it may be helpful in a different way for you as well.
Thank you so much for calling, Julia. And we hope that the journey improves, because it sounds like it's taking its toll. And it does on so many families. But there are two things that families can do. Well, there's more than two things. But, of course, resolution and to get a loved one into recovery would be fantastic, and it is doable. These two blokes here were at various different but at road's ends, and they were lost and they now are found. And I'm not a religious person, but there's also a better way of living with an addict.
Yeah.
A better way for you and a better way for the addicts.
Correct, Finey. Correct.
And that is absolutely what this show is about. It's not about...
And it's a missing link in addiction. People just think it's the addict and the addict's problem. But I tell you what, we've all got a group of people basically that we take along with us that don't get any support or any help.
And because of the growing nature, there is now people that want to make that live with an addict. Gee, there's even a better way to live having lost an addict. These are all realities of life in this country in 2015. So if you are going through hell, either as an addict or as somebody who's so close to an addict that it's tearing you apart, don't feel that that's the punishment that comes from addiction. That's not true. It's not the net result of addiction is suffering for everybody around that person, or at least if it can be minimised and improved. So please ring up that family anonymous number and get in touch with people that are professional and can put you amongst people who care. A break, and when we come back, we'll take a couple. Care deeply for every caller that calls in and is emotional like Julia. But of course, we can but do a bit in terms of the broad brushstrokes that we speak about on this program. And there are some people who need to talk specifically about their own situation one-on-one with a qualified professional on the other end of the line. That's not possible to do in a one-hour radio show with various commercial realities. So the importance of Lifeline cannot be overstated. And that Lifeline number is 131114. 131114. Confirmation of that, Mick?
Say that again, Finey.
131114.
131114 is correct.
We'll never, ever get that wrong again. Nick is in Greensboro. Corrected myself last time I did, but it is now, unlike the Glen and Mount Waverley conundrum, imprinted. Good evening, Nick.
What your thoughts are on the decrease in the incidence of cigarette smoking and whether there's an association with the increase of illicit substance use.
Yeah, look, I mean, not to my knowledge, you know. I haven't made a connection there, and I've been doing this a long time, so I've been working in the drug and alcohol field for some 13 years, and...
How many people do you have that come in that don't smoke ciggies?
What's
the ratio? Do you?
Yeah, I have a lot.
Okay, we've had one this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I can't relate to it.
I mean, we just saw the depths of the craving that is smoking cigarettes with strong. The banning of smoking of cigarettes in Victorian prison, in the prison system. Might talk to you about that next week, just for an insight there, because of course the remand the remand centre.
My feelings really pulsated when I heard that, and I thought, the riot, geez, they've gotten off pretty lightly there. It was only a pretty small riot, really.
You can imagine all hell breaking loose as a result.
Course.
It's a deterrent for going to jail.
Deterrents don't really work like that, though.
Maybe it's an incentive to go to jail. It's like the quit program. It's the quit program on steroids. We've come to the end of our time. Liam in Newport, who's... I think I know Liam as a regular caller with a passion for footy. Anyhow, Liam, we apologise, but would love to hear from you next week. I was going to talk about the Harley Bennell issue, so... thankfully, it's not about a personal issue, but more an observation, though valued. It's the end of the hour and we don't have time, which is unfortunate. In the tennis, Nick Kyrgios tanked in the second set, could not have cared less, played like it didn't matter. But that sometimes happens in tennis, and he's regrouped his thoughts for the next set. He now trails two sets to love, but leads 3-1 in the third. He's on serve down 15-30. This game might be very, very important if he's to stay in the match. I want to thank Mick Hall of Dayhab. Easy to remember, the number 1-800-DAYHAB. Press the things on your phone with the letters on them. And the Sober Living Housing of Carnegie, where Gavin is involved, can be contacted on 95781746. Know this, that it might not be on the front page and it might not be a high-profile individual or a sports person that you recognise, but again... You can assure yourself that between this Monday and next Monday, the papers will be filled of tales, tragic tales, that are inexorably entwined to addiction. So it is the right time to make a move away from it. Thank you, Mick. Thank you, Gavin.
Good on you,
Thank you.